Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming early this Saturday morning. My name is Mardell Shepley. I'm in the Department of Design and Environmental Analysis, and I'm going to be starting to moderate this panel. So as you know, the title of this is Where Art, Science, and Technology Intersect, Fostering Innovation at Cornell. And I'm doing something that is very difficult for me. This is a Pecha Kucha presentation. Anyone heard of Pecha Kucha? Well, essentially what they do is, instead of pontificating for hours and hours on a topic, they ask you to communicate your ideas with 20 slides, and each slide you have 20 seconds. So, and it's on a timer. So it's not like I can spend 5 seconds on one. And so you can see where someone like me, who's very nonlinear, you know, sort of getting off on tangents, talking about some horse I fell off of or something, I have to actually stay on target. So I apologize in advance for reading from a script. Otherwise, I would not survive the process, and I'd sort of start giggling, and you'd have to start over again. So as I say, you guys can follow this process. And it's sort of interesting personally because I had to take 170 slides and reduce them to 20. That in of itself said, OK, figure out what's important here. And I think that's sort of a great life exercise. So art and science, in their finest expressions, they are one and the same. I'll be quoting those who support their simultaneous use to achieve creativity. I'll discuss boundaries, integration, definitions, and in many ways, the essence of a creative life. There's an architect, Bill Caldell. He kept this diary of this I believes. Plato and Steve Jobs also wrote of their beliefs on art and science. The dodecahedron is a solid which the god used for embroidering the constellations on the whole heaven. And Jobs, technology alone is not enough. It's technology married with the liberal arts, married with humanities that yields the results that makes our hearts sing. As well as Dolly, it is with pine masons and the most gelatinous and indeterminate neutrinos that I want to paint the beauty of the angels and not reality. There are those in the sciences who consider the lack of access to research as a moral violation. Excuse me, I'm not even allowed to cough as part of this. Noreta Kirchhe stated, to violate a person's ability to distinguish fact from fantasy is the epistemological equivalent of rape. And Ian E. Cummings, on the other hand, says, since feeling is purse, he who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you, wholly to be a fool while spring is in the world. Why do some consider these approaches to be mutually exclusive? This I personally believe. I believe we face complex problems and no single approach can provide all the answers. I believe that one can't be a socially responsible designer or scientist without using both intuition and research. I believe that the creativity you experience the moment you prove a geometric theorem is identical to the experience you have when you are painting something and you finally capture that moment of perfection. The golden ratio, as expressed in the Parthenon, is a classic example of how designers have reconciled art and science. Scientists claim that we innately prefer these proportions and have tested this preference. From Phidias, the Parthenon, to Marabota, the golden rectangle has been credited as a guiding parameter in design. The ratio can be found in the human genome, musical scales, and brain waves. Bloggers debate whether Apple used the proportions to create its branding. Corbusier, who was originally concerned about the potential loss of mysticism in the design process, later embraced the ratio in his Modular Man. Why this fascination? Most find this image beautiful. Perhaps inspiration comes from the presence of geometry and ratios. And why is nature so important to us? The biofuel hypothesis suggests that we have innate affiliation based on our evolutionary development. Those of our primitive ancestors who were innately fascinated by nature and its geometry would have enhanced their chances of survival. So this is interesting. Da Vinci, in 1500, said, all moved bodies continue to move as long as the impression of the force of their motors remains in them. And then 150 years later, Newton, every body continues its state of rest and of its uniform motion in a straight line, unless it is compelled to change. In this dance between Da Vinci and Newton, did art loop to science or science to art? Alberti's Painters Academy in Rome shows images of people working with perspective on the ground, sculpture, doing analysis of anatomy elsewhere. Picasso was influenced by his relationship with actuarial Prince. This interaction with mathematics and the conversation physics at the time regarding relativity had been posited to have led him to paint objects simultaneously from various perspectives, theory of relativity. This conversation heated up in the 20th century when C.P. Snow published his discourse in 1959. According to Snow, non-scientists perceive scientists to be shallowly optimistic, unaware of the human condition, whereas scientists believe literary intellectuals are lacking in foresight. To have this discussion, we must ask, what is art and what is science? So, much of the public cite the Mona Lisa as the pinnacle of art, but many agree that Christo and Jean-Claude's environmental gestures, such as running fence that you're looking at here, are also expressions of art. What about Frank Stella or Jackson Pollock or Andy Warhol's soup cans? If you consider bridges to be the ultimate representation of the forces of physics, why is it that Calatrava's projects are cited as works of art? Could it be that the bridge represents the essence of the forces that hold it together? Could the purity of this science loop back to the aesthetics of our experience? So I'm sort of a nerd. The next image is of Data, Data from Star Trek. To find out what it is to be human is his primary dilemma, and he wants to be able to upgrade his programming to achieve that. In this episode, he's decided that humor is core to humanity and is trying to embrace it. But are we really different from him? We're both physical matter. Is the difference the art of the soul? The following examples are fodder for consideration. Is music more about technique and science or about art? Jimi Hendrix had remarkable, I'm dating myself, remarkable technique when he played the guitar. He also brought the incredible spirit, his incredible spirit and angst to the work. However, no matter how enthusiastic you are as a musician, you cannot excel without fully embracing the training. The designers of things that need to function in the real world, such as planes, trains, and automobiles, must face the reality of protecting life and reducing energy consumption. What percentage of your experience with one of these vehicles is about the emotional aesthetic, and what percentage is about where the rubber meets the road? The analysis of dance falls into a similar debate. Most consider it to be more than science and technique, more art than science and technique, although any dancer will tell you that a very controlled and explicit training process is required to achieve the glory of what can be represented on the stage. No amount of emoting on the proscenium is going to achieve the beauty of dance without the technique. So returning to Data and humor, is humor more about art or science, art or science and technique? Calvin states, as an artist, I'll speak to future generations long after I'm gone. Smart thinking, replies Hobbes, and Calvin, I'll call this new descending a staircase. So those that are familiar with that work of art, this nod to Duchamp, Duchamp might even bring Einstein to laugh. So in the end, isn't it all about beauty? Isn't it all about truth? The art of beauty and the science of beauty, the art of truth, the truth of art and the truth of science. So beauty is truth, truth beauty. That is all you know on earth and all you need to know. So having survived 6 minutes and 20 seconds,